the Edinburgh Reporter podcast, and today I'm with local MP Deirdre Brock. Deirdre, you're looking great. It's lovely to see you.
Well, I know, lovely to see you
and
too, Phyllis,
of course
in person.
You're on recess,
finally,
aren't you?
We are, yes, yeah. So that's a couple of weeks Easter recess. So.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Good.
Which and doesn't mean that we're all sitting around with our feet up, I have to say.
Really?
We're doing quite a lot.
You have things to do.
Getting out and about, yes. Lots of things on.
One of the very first things I was going to ask you was, have you started doing surgeries again yet?
Yes, actually, I've got a pop-up surgery just this afternoon, this morning. We're doing them by appointment. We're just doing them every couple of weeks at the moment. People are understandably still cautious about going out, given the situation with COVID, but we are we're certainly delighted to be seeing people in person again and being able to help them when they need help. So just if folk look at the my website or drop us an email, we can tell you times and we can make an appointment for you.
What kind of things are people coming to you with at the present time? I can guess some of it has to do with Ukraine, I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely. We're having quite a few inquiries now from folk who are part of the families, you know, the Ukrainian families scheme, and also from people who are trying to get family members and friends into the UK and trying to deal with some of the difficulties of the Home Office system and the visa application scheme that the Home Office has put in place, which, you know, it is unfortunate, I think, because I think the UK is the only country in Europe that is putting these sorts of conditions on people fleeing the Ukrainian war. Not to say that there haven't been some people happily who have arrived here and are being settled, and I'm delighted about that, but it feels frustrating that you have to, you know, expect people to go through paperwork when they've been forced to flee their homes. And you know, initially folk were being expected to provide passports. Now that's been smoothed out and there's been some changes to that, happily. But I mean, some of it, you know, to be fair to the Home Office, there are some very good people in there, officials who I've had dealings with directly, who are trying their best. But part of it, of course, is, you know, the hostile environment policies of this current UK government, I think, must have its part to play in these difficulties that are being put up in front of those trying to reach a safe haven in the UK. So yeah, that's frustrating. But the other thing, of course, is the cost of living crisis. Now, I secured a debate in Westminster last week, actually, on food security. And you need to be incredibly sensitive to the fact that, you know, people in Ukraine are losing their homes, losing their lives. You know, they are, they're experiencing the most dreadful, awful difficulties. But Ukraine has been described as the breadbasket of the world by some. And Ukraine and Russia between them provide something like 30% of the world's wheat. And the impact for, I'll talk about the domestic impact for us here, but also the international impact on countries like those in sub-Saharan Africa, which depend very heavily on those supplies from Ukraine and Russia for staples, is really, you know, the world needs to wake up to this, and we really need to start raising the alarm, because the, you know, potential impact of that is extremely worrying and potentially be just devastating. And then, of course, there's the impact here in the UK. And the issue of food security is something certainly I and people across the parties in Westminster have raised constantly. And to give them their credit, you know, a number of Tory MPs who in particular represent farming constituencies, you know, raised the alarm about this in the wake of Brexit. Because Brexit, of course, I think, you know, there was simply not enough attention paid to this either by the Environment Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, their ministers, or indeed the International Trade Department, whose interests seem frankly to trump those of the Environment, Food and Rural Affairs Department all the time in the negotiations, you know, the long Brexit negotiations. And so, you know, we'd been making the point that you needed to strengthen our domestic food supply, not weaken it by potentially introducing cheaper, lower quality food as a result of the trade deals that were being set up, you know, rapidly in the face of what I would describe as a disastrous Brexit. You know, we've already seen the impact on trade by many percentage points. There's been a drop in trade, both in terms of imports as well as exports, and the knock-on impact on the food and drink industry in Scotland is horrendous. And you know, we had been doing incredibly well with our food and drink industry. It's grown enormously in the last 10 years. So moving down from the food manufacturers and exporters down to the producers, the farmers, and the possible loss of you know, their ability to make a living for themselves on the back of the loss of export is incredibly worrying. Now, we are in happily a better situation in Scotland because unlike in England, where they are gradually tapering out all subsidies for food production in for English farmers, we are tapering out to a certain extent, and that would be dependent on farmers agreeing to a form of environmental land management, but they are not removing completely subsidies for food production. So
these subsidies are now, rather than coming from the EU as they once did, before all that Brexit stuff, I remember that seemed to take ages. So they're now coming from DEFRA, I suppose, the Department of, I can't remember what DEFRA stands for.
Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, yes. For the English farmers, yeah. Yes. I mean, we are still, at the moment, able to decide how we subsidise or give grants to our farmers in Scotland. And we have our own choices to make. We have very different conditions, land conditions in Scotland to England, for example. And we, you know, feel very strongly that needs to be taken into account. Increasingly, of course, we're seeing a lot of, the responsibility for handing out the funding, if you like, to the devolved nations has moved from Europe to Westminster. We're seeing worrying interference in devolved areas, which I think we'll only see more of.
Not just in farming, then.
Not just farming, no. Right across the board, and there are bills. The bills have been introduced, such as the Internal Market Bill, which we are extremely concerned about in Scotland. The Scottish Government's very worried about, and the Subsidy Control Bill, which is coming back from the Lords in a couple of weeks, which combined could very much allow the Westminster government to argue that the different subsidies we offer farmers up here could compromise the interests of farmers in England. And with these bills, they will be able to move in to address that. So that's a big area of concern.
Some kind of internal competition within the UK itself.
Well, that's the internal market that they've been setting up. I mean, you know, we'd always argued that these sorts of things need to be agreed, not imposed. We were working on a series of common frameworks, most of which have actually been agreed now. So we were edging towards, you know, being in agreement on the way to handle the different different approaches to, say, agriculture from the four nations. But they just moved very rapidly without warning to impose the Internal Market Bill. It got scooted through the Parliament, despite the protests both from the Welsh Government and the Scottish Government. And there, you know, basically those concerns were ignored, and they pressed on regardless.
So looking back over the last couple of years, it's been a tricky time for everybody, and you included. What do you think over the last couple of years, if we try and take COVID out of this equation, what do you think that you or your party have managed to achieve? Or do we have to keep COVID in that equation to give you any kind of, what have you managed to achieve over this last couple of years?
I mean, the Scottish Government, of course, continues to introduce things like the child welfare payment, the child benefit payment, which they've just announced £20, and they've just announced it's going to go up to £25 per child for those families that qualify. And that has been heralded by numerous organisations that work with, you know, poverty issues in Scotland as a real game changer. But I do feel angry, really, that some of the need for that is a direct result of policies from the UK government, and that our government has to spend its set budget, because of course it is a fixed, largely a fixed budget, has to spend that money rather than putting it into other areas of improvement that could be had in Scotland, has to put it into mitigating UK government policy, you know, around the hostile environment, around, you know, the Chancellor's Spring Statement recently didn't include any uplifts for people on benefits. And we're looking at potentially by autumn of this year an 8% increase in inflation, at, you know, possibly even more. And of course, for people on the lower, you know, who are in poverty, the impact on them is higher because they spend more of their money on the sort of things like fuel and food.
Yeah, because their fuel, it costs more because they're on a prepayment system. That always seems to me to be desperately unfair.
In some cases, yes. And he's holding firm. He's, you know, and many of us have raised this issue in the Parliament, but he is... I can't see how, at the way things, the way costs are being driven up at the moment, I can't see how he can't come back and offer something because... You know, I mean, the thought of so many folk. I mean, already we're seeing food bank use going up,
particularly and places like your own constituency. I mean, that's been a hotbed with things like empty kitchens going on all the way through the pandemic, feeding 1,000 people a day. They were at one point.
Yeah, I mean, that's across Edinburgh. I mean, they weren't just confined to Lit, but they've been doing fantastic work. There are also there's also a sort of cooperative of groups in the north of the constituency, in Granton and Pilton and Muirhouse being in the next constituency. But so that is Fresh Start and Spartans and North Edinburgh Arts and a variety PCHP, a variety of groups like that, who just swung into action at the beginning of the pandemic. Realised that they were going to have to do something very quickly, and they didn't have time to wait for, you know, the sorts of, you know, the sorts of paperwork, if you like, that you know, perhaps more official bodies would have to do. They were all absolutely credible, you know, trusted charities and very much part of the community. So they swung into action. They were delivering food parcels from very early doors and, you know, have won awards now for the amount of work they did. They were having regular meetings that myself and Ben McPherson, the MSP for this area, were attending whenever we could. I mean, it is great to see that folk just took these things on and eventually, you know, the bodies, other bodies, public bodies, if you like, kind of caught up with them and sort of swung in behind them and offered tremendous help as well.
Yeah, but it's terrible, really, that you know, the Poverty Commission has discovered 80,000 people in poverty, living in poverty, when it reported, and one in five children in Edinburgh living in poverty. And so clearly, you know, in those dreadful words, something has to be done. To try and address it, but to go back a little bit to what you in particular are doing at Westminster, what else have you been up to? Which committees are you on, and what are your big interests?
Yeah, Scottish Affairs Committee. I'm very lucky to be on that because obviously everything to do with that is to do with Scottish Affairs, whereas many of the select committees down there, you know, you might find 40% of the time, say, have something that's relevant to Scotland because it's in a more devolved area. So at the moment we're looking into hydrogen and CCS. That's just the start of an inquiry that we've put out requests for folk to get back to us with evidence on.
That's carbon capture.
Yes, sorry, carbon capture. And we have just completed the first stage of an inquiry into defence in Scotland, and that was focused on estate and personnel. So we've had representatives of the personnel, service personnel, come along and speak to us. We've had representatives from Babcock's and BAE and so on come and speak to us. We've had a Tory minister come and speak to us. You know, so we were just We're just working on the report for that at the moment. We've not agreed it yet, but it's...
And that's looking at the future of defence forces here in Scotland?
Yep,
like
yep.
Redford Barracks, like Lossiemouth?
Yes,
like
yes, yes. That was all part of the conversation. I can't tell you what the conclusions are, but...
Oh, that's terrible to know that, not
yeah,
tell us.
Yeah, I have to wait for the report, I'm afraid. But no, absolutely. And it's been fascinating, actually. And, you know, obviously the other thing that we're going to be looking at is shipbuilding. So
that would seem to be the topic of the moment.
Yeah, well, naval shipbuilding largely, I think. But
not ferries.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not quite sure. We haven't sort of done the full scope out of what we'll be discussing under that. So it might be something that we'll be looking at, but...
Can I ask you, this is a very pointed question, you're probably not going to want to answer this. How do you think the Scottish Government are doing here in Scotland, overall?
I think they're doing, well, I would say this, but I find them, there's a compassion within Scottish Government that I find lacking down in Westminster. And I feel that their actions are done with the best interests, in their view, of the people of Scotland in mind. Too often I see down in Westminster just a dismissal of the many concerns raised by all of us across the House about an issue. And then too often I see those same ministers having to come back months later and admit that actually they don't admit it, obviously, but you know the upshot of what they're announcing in a statement is that they've made a mistake. Now, obviously, all governments make mistakes. You can't expect that, but there is an arrogance to the approach I see down in Westminster that I see as lacking in the Scottish Government. That's not to say that everything they do is no one government gets it right all the time. It's impossible, but I really, my feeling, and you could argue I would say this, is that they are always doing it with the best interests of the people of Scotland in mind. I mean, there's a whole issue of Russian donations to the leading party down in Westminster, of course.
Well, there's all the other stuff round about COVID, about various contracts.
There's the PPE contracts,
Will that just be swept under the carpet?
Well, I think National Audit Office has just put out another report on this. So I don't think they've given up. They're going to keep, digging away at that, which is good because they are independent, and you do, get a real feel for something of what's happened behind the scenes. You know, there's the fraud that Rishi Sunak, apparently the Chancellor, appears prepared to just write off, which I find extraordinary.
You don't mean his fraud. You
Yes, quite right. Indeed.
Just before we defame him.
No, I don't want to do that. But yeah, definitely I find it extraordinary that they just appear to think that, what is it? 11 billion.
Was it 11 billion? I was going to say 2, but it's 11 billion.
Yeah, I need to go back and check. Billions, it's a very... billions, yeah. Yes. Let's just say billions. And yes, questions to be raised about the PPE contracts, some of which involve, people from here. So,
yeah.
But that would all have to... oopsie.
Well, it's really... I have to wait for that ambulance to go past, I think.
Yeah.
Well, it's very nice to see you, Deirdre. Very nice to see you back here in Leith, where the sun is literally shining upon us.
It is. Sunny Leith.
It must be very nice for you to spend some time back here again.
It is, actually.
A few weeks away down in London.
Yeah, I did actually. You mentioned not going down during a pandemic. I actually was going down quite a lot, not in lockdown, but... when it was permitted, because I was leading for us on the Agriculture Bill, the Fisheries Bill and the Environment Bill, all of which came about because of Brexit. And so I was having to come down for those quite regularly. I was on committees, so they were meeting twice a week and so on. It seems a shame that the hybrid system, which in some respects I think worked quite well, is still frowned upon by...
Yeah, they're not going to do that.
No.
That's sad, actually, because it would allow more people to
stay
home but still be active.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, I know. There are you know, folk with really quite some serious health conditions, or even just, you know, unable to move about for whatever reason, they've broken their leg or whatever, and they can't get down as easily. And it does seem, at least for voting purposes, at least, that they should be, something should be enabled for that. We are starting to, we are using, in the Scottish Affairs Committee, we are actually using remote, you know, people can attend virtually, which I think is good, actually. It means we've got a good range of people. We can get people from around the world.
Yeah.
To come and give evidence in remote parts of Scotland, indeed.
Great. Well, do keep in touch and let us know what you're up to.
Lovely to see you.
Thank you very much for speaking with us this morning.
No, good to see you. Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening to the Edinburgh Report. Listen out for more episodes coming soon, and make sure you don't miss any by hitting the subscribe button now. This is one of the platforms where we can help advertise your business to our listeners. Would you like to know more about that? Then email editor@theedinburghreporter.co.uk. And remember, you can subscribe to have our monthly newspaper delivered to you direct. Sign up today on our website, www.theedinburghreporter.co.uk.